and mountaintops were dusted with snow. "Don't let this lovely afternoon fool you," he told himself. "Winter is on its way." As usual, he had driven one of the camp's buggies into the village and parked it in front of the longhouse. Beats walking back and forth, Brad told himself. The Gammons had been curious about the vehicle the first time they saw it. Brad had done his best to explain the horseless carriage to them. He had even lifted up its hood to reveal the tiny nuclear-powered electric motor. Ling had asked if he could drive the buggy, and Brad had allowed him to tool it around the village's central square. Slowly. Sitting beside the Gammon, Brad had kept the buggy's remote controller in his lap, ready to take over the controls if he had to. Once the drive was finished, Ling stepped out of the buggy with obvious reluctance. "I could travel a long way in this," he said. "All the way to the mountains, I think." "And farther," said Brad, making a mental note to leave a couple of the buggies in the village when he departed for Earth. That evening, as the setting Mithra cast purple shadows across the hollow, Brad joined Minx, Ling, and a half-dozen other Gammons as they went into the home they shared for their evening meal. A sharp wind was whistling down from the snow-capped mountains. The weather was turning cold, raw. But inside the house, the fireplace glowed warm and cheerfully. The Gammons sat in a semicircle on the dirt floor as their stew pot bubbled. Brad thought the stew smelled harsh, unappetizing, but the Gammons seemed delighted with the aroma. Sitting between Nx and Ling as usual, Brad saw through the house's only window that it was fully night outside, dark and cold. "I'll have to leave you soon," he said. "Leave?" Nx echoed. "I'll come back tomorrow." "Oh," with obvious relief. Ling said, "But one day you will leave for good and return to your own village in the sky." "Yes, that is true," said Brad. Ling clutched Brad's knee with one of his ropey hands, making Brad twitch with alarm. The Gammon asked, "Bird, why can't you stay here with us? When the monsters come again, you could protect us." Brad shook his head. "I wish I could." Nx said, "Bird must return to his own village, far away in the sky." "But why?" Ling asked, almost pleading. Nx answered, "It is the wish of the Sky Masters." "No," said Brad. "The Sky Masters do not control me or my people." "You think not," argued Nx. "But the Sky Masters are very powerful, very wise. They are controlling you even though you do not know it." "Can that really be true?" one of the other Gammons asked. "It is true," Nx said. "The Sky Masters are all-powerful. They are watching us now." "No," said Brad. "They have gone far away." "Even from far away, they can see us," Ling challenged. "Then why did they let Bird protect us from the monsters?" "To test us," Ling replied without a moment's hesitation. "To see if we would accept their judgment over us, or give in to the temptation to live, even though that is against their command to us." Brad asked, "The Sky Masters want you to die?" "Yes, so that there will be room for the new folk when they rise from the ground."
"But we've built a new village for them," Brad said.
Ling added, "We can build many new villages all across the land, and the Sky Masters will return and smash all the villages to dust. They will kill us all for disobeying their commands."
Ling leaned forward as he sat and reached across Brad to tap Nx on the chest.
"So the punishment for not allowing the monsters to kill us is for the Sky Masters to kill us?"
"Yes."
"Then what difference does it make?" Ling shouted. "We die either way."
Nx was silent for several heartbeats. At last he replied, "We have disobeyed the Sky Masters. They will return and punish us."
"But until they do," said Ling, "let us live and enjoy living. Let us live today and not worry about tomorrow."
"No," said Brad.
"Let us live today and prepare for tomorrow."
All through the drive back to the encampment, Brad thought about what he had to do. If there's no way to prevent the cats from crossing the Gamma the next time the two planets come close, then I'm going to have to give the Gammons weapons to defend themselves. Nx is a fatalist, but Ling wants to live. He's the one who should be leader in the village. He's the one who'll fight. But how many others will follow his lead, Brad wondered. How many of them will stand there like dumb animals and allow the cats to tear them apart, the way Dern did? Once he got to his quarters, Brad began to tell Felicia what he was planning.
Give them weapons? She looked shocked. Brad, you can't do that. You don't know where it might lead.
It will lead to their survival, he said flatly.
It could wreck their culture, she replied almost pleadingly. It could destroy them more completely than the cats from Beta.
Brad started to shake his head, but Felicia insisted. Surely, as an anthropologist, you can see that, can't you? It would be like giving guns to children. Children who are in the grip of an ancient mythology, of superstition and ignorance.
But you can't force them to change,
can't I? Almost desperately, Felicia said.
Kossoff won't allow it.
Brad knew she was right, but he said tightly, We'll see. Killing Machines.
It's fascinating, said Felicia, as she stared at the holographic image of Planet Beta's bleak landscape.
Felicia and Ursula Steiner were sitting side by side on a pair of the cramped laboratory's padded stools as they intently watched the 3D imagery of one of the cats limping across the bare stony ground.
It looks emaciated, Steiner said. It's dying, said Felicia.
Starving, Steiner murmured.
They're all dying, Felicia said. All across the planet.
It is fascinating, said Steiner, staring at the dying cat limping across the barren landscape. The cats that went to Gamma all died within a few days of landing there, while the few who remained on Beta have survived all this time.
But now they're dying, Felicia pointed out.
Steiner called, MC, how many of the cats are still active?
16, replied the master computer's voice.
Across the entire planet?
MC answered flatly. The satellite sensors have detected 16 of the animals still active. They all appear to be dying.
Starving to death, said Felicia.
Clenching her fists, Steiner insisted. We must acquire a few of those carcasses for examination before they completely decompose.
Will Professor Kossoff allow a flight to Beta? Felicia asked.
He must. He's got to. Kossoff wasn't surprised by Steiner's request.
Pick up a few of the dead cats? He asked as he sat behind his desk.
Steiner and Felicia were still in the bio lab on Gamma's surface.
Yes, Steiner replied eagerly. We've got to examine them before they completely decompose.
Drumming his fingers on his desktop, Kossoff said, Ursula, a mission to Beta won't be as easy as hopping down from orbit up here to Gamma. Beta's receding from our location, moving away farther each day.
Felicia asked, but it's still within reach of a shuttlecraft, isn't it?
Kossoff asked, MC, can one of our shuttles reach Beta?
Yes, replied the computer's voice, although it will only be able to carry a fraction of its usual payload of cargo.
All we need is two or three of the dead cats, Steiner urged.
Kossoff nodded. Let me get approval from Earth.
We mustn't lose any time, Steiner pleaded. Their dead bodies are decomposing rapidly.
I'll order a shuttle outfitted for the mission. My call to Earth will be strictly pro forma.
But what if they say no?
They won't. Trust me.
3 weeks later, Brad returned from the Gamins' village to find that Felicia was not at their quarters. Again, it was late, fully night, and he had been looking forward to a quiet supper with his wife. She's spending more time in her lab with Steiner than she is with me, he thought sourly. Then he immediately felt guilty. She's busy examining the cats that have been brought back from Beta. She's excited about her work. I guess I would be too if I were a biologist. Still, he didn't know if he should break out a prepackaged dinner and eat alone, or wait for Felicia to return from her lab. Neither, he decided. He left their quarters and walked through the darkness to the biology lab. No one was in the lab. The main room was brightly lit, workbenches and equipment lining the floor. But Felicia wasn't anywhere in sight. Then Brad saw there was a door on the far side of the room. She must be in there, he reasoned as he crossed the room. A handwritten sign stuck to the door read, No admittance, dissection in progress. That can't mean me, Brad told himself as he opened the door. The stench made his knees buckle, the reek of rotting flesh. Trying to keep from gagging,
Brad saw that Felicia and Steiner were bent over the body of one of the cats stretched out on the dissection table. Both women were in protective biosuits, wearing breathing masks and goggles. Felicia looked up as Brad staggered into the lab, holding a hand over his face.
"Can't you read?"
Steiner snarled, without turning to see who had entered the room. Felicia pointed to the closet on the far wall and said,
"Get into a breathing mask and biosuit if you intend to remain in here."
Steiner glanced over her shoulder at him, clearly annoyed. Brad crossed the laboratory and put on a breathing mask. The oxygen felt cold and good. Then he struggled into one of the protective suits hanging in the closet. It was a bit small for him, sleeves and leggings ending several centimeters short. It felt snug as Brad slapped its fasteners over his chest.
"Goggles, too," Felicia called, still standing at the dissection table. "And sterile gloves," Steiner added.
At last, Brad was adequately protected, although he knew that any alien pathogens would hardly attack human tissue. "But rules are rules," he said to himself as he walked to the table where the two women were bent over their grisly work. "Making progress?" he asked.
"Yes,"
Steiner replied tersely. Felicia looked up at him.
"You're right, Brad. These animals are nothing more than killing machines. They're designed to breed, to attack the gamins, and then to die."
"After they produce a new generation," Steiner added.
"And all aimed at killing the gamins," said Brad. Steiner nodded.
"It appears that way."
Know Thy Enemy. For once, Brad didn't mind attending one of Kossoff's meetings. The Starship's main auditorium was packed for Steiner's presentation. The entire biology staff was there, of course, together with all the department heads and much of each of the other department's staffs. Captain Desai and a handful of the ship's officers were there as well, sitting with Kossoff in the front row. Brad sat alongside Felicia, in the midst of the biology team. Littlejohn and the other anthropologists were in the row behind them. The buzz of anticipatory conversations stopped as Steiner climbed the three steps to the stage. Behind her, the wall-to-wall 3D display showed a still image of one of the six-legged cats from Beta, huge, powerful, snarling. Steiner wore a severe white pantsuit, with jewelry sparkling at her throat, wrists, and earlobes. Her golden hair was pinned up atop her head, making her look even taller than usual, more regal.
"I am here," she began, "to report on our examination of the cat-like creatures from planet Beta."
The audience sat stock still, taut, expectant.
"What we have found is truly extraordinary," Steiner went on. "I haven't seen anything like this in all my days as a biologist. These cats are nothing less than killing machines. They are built to kill, evolved, or perhaps deliberately designed to slaughter the intelligent bipeds of planet Gamma, and then themselves to die off."
The holographic image behind her changed to show a detailed image of one of the cat's innards.
"This was one of the cats we found on Gamma."
Turning slightly to aim a laser pointer at the imagery, Steiner said,
"As you can see, the creature has only a rudimentary digestive system. It can drink water and ingest little else. Its active lifespan is measured in days. It emerges from its egg after flying from Beta to Gamma, hunts down all the gamins it can find, and then dies."
She hesitated a moment, then went on.
"It is noteworthy to realize that its digestive system cannot handle anything we would think of as food, meat or vegetables. It kills its prey, but does not eat it. It dies of starvation."
From the front row, Kossoff asked, "How could such an animal evolve? How does it procreate itself?"